It is indeed Monday. Back to work after what has been a rather kind of crazy sports weekend going on.
What happened?
Well, there's big baseball news. There's one NHL trade, but we'll probably get into that a little later with the Colorado Avalanche.
The Bills stink.
Excellent football game. A bunch of great college football games on Saturday.
But to lead off our show, maybe one of the greatest spectacles I've seen in a long, long time on the internet was a Junior A massive brawl on the ice during a teddy bear toss. And I'm like, what am I seeing here? I'm watching guys wrestle and punch each other.
Yeah.
Besides stuffed animals. You can't get any goofier than that.
Was it Barry in Ottawa?
67s and the Colts going at it. You know, I went to a lot when I was a kid. I was a junior hockey guy, season ticket holder for the first 20 years of my life. I can only imagine some of the stuff I've seen at junior hockey games, and that brought me back to my youth. Guys just scrapping. I'm like, the OHL's dead. It's not what it used to be. And then you see guys brawling during a teddy bear toss. Like, we're back. The OHL is back, baby.
It is great. It's a great video.
Well, we're glad you're along for the ride for the next 2 hours, including our Leaf Hour edition that's starting right now. We are live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet Plus. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, and General Nick, Frank the Tank.
Frank the Tank, I don't think. Is Frank the Tank?
I just saw Frank the Tank.
Oh.
He said, I'm working your show.
Okay, we should eliminate this portion of the lineup. It's always a wild card.
It's all right.
Listen, there's a new person every day. So
true.
I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. I'm going to read this off your lineup.
Please don't.
No, I am.
Why are you going to bury me?
Like, I'm not going to bury you.
I guess you're about to bury me.
No, I'm not, because I think this is my doing.
You're going to bury me.
I'm not reading this correctly.
You're going to bury me.
Okay.
Toronto Maple Leafs lose both halves of a back-to-back on Friday and Saturday night. Friday, 2-1 to the Washington Capitals, and Pittsburgh, 3-2 on Saturday.
Yeah? What's wrong with that? How bad is that?
Is that the scores or the record of the weekend or something else differently? What was the score?
Oh, 5-2 on 2-1 on 3-2. I don't even know what the hell the score is.
5-2 on Saturday.
Yeah, 5-2 on Saturday.
Yeah, and
Friday was what?
Was there an empty net on Friday?
Yeah.
I thought it was 3-1. Yeah. So you are going to bury me. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, you are correct. Yeah. I am.
Yeah,
but listen.
Fine. Listen, I turned off the TV after when they go up by one.
If I had the choice between starting the show with nothing or having your lineup, which is.
You'd pick nothing.
Inaccurate.
You'd pick nothing.
Inaccuracy.
You'd pick nothing.
Listen, I get it. You're rattled because your Blue Jays.
Blue Jays
lost Soto.
Yeah,
which is a great restaurant in Yorkville.
You'd have to be the biggest idiot to ever think that he was actually going to come here.
So, lesson learned over a year ago with Ohtani on a plane.
Yeah, I don't think there's.
So
one,
you thought they got played right from the get go.
I never for a second. Thought that they were
did anyone else think that
I don't think
the Jays
so.
Could get him? It was real money. Rogers offered him real
for sure,
money.
Of course.
Which is at the end of the day, it's a good sign.
15 years, $765 million money.
There was people reporting that the Jays would make the highest offer
No deferred money, right? That's what the thing was. Like it's like just straight cash. No deferred money from Steve Cohen and the Mets, and he's just very rich. And it's very hard to come back from that. You just can't compete with a guy who spends $150 million on
but
statues.
But even if they made the same offer, he's picking the Mets. I
mean, maybe if they offered $5 million more like they did over the Yankees. But listen.
So in speaking of that, I got a taste of a short stint in New York City to understand the dynamics of that sports market. Yeah. I won a championship there, so I've seen it at its best. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine the pain right now for Yankee fans knowing that they got outbid by the Mets.
I love the Mets. That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Good for them.
Let me play the violin for the Yankees fans. Those poor guys, they never get anything.
It would have been fine if he went to L.A. or even if he went to Toronto, but to watch him go down the street to the Mets right now, I can't think of anything that's happened to the or New York City fans quite like that.
Yeah, it's a tough one for them.
That's
for sure.
Fun that he's not in the AL East, at least. At least he's in the National League.
Yeah, like I got to tell you, the ideal scenario, because the ideal scenario clearly was him coming to the Jays, but that was never going to happen. The ideal scenario was him going to the other league. Like the Yankees are
but it's,
way worse.
It was only for like the gap was only like $5 million.
Yeah.
They had an extra year, yeah. But it's still not that big of a difference.
It's $5 million more.
I mean, $50 million another year on. I think their offer was $16 million over that.
But there's one thing with like there's an opt out after the fifth year, and then if he opts back in, he makes more. At that point, like he can get up to $800 million with the Mets.
At
obviously,
that point, you're post money. You're not even someone who worries or thinks about
the,
money.
So the real scary part for me is not the Soto thing; it's the Vladdy thing. And I mean, I don't want to do too many Jays takes here. People don't care about it, but you see Vladdy watching him get
double
that massive that contract, and he's like, "Yeah, well, I want to try that. I'd like to try that a lot. That looks fun, getting all that money." And he's a free agent at the end of this year. Why would he sign with the Jays?
There's a chance he signs at all.
Here? He's going to stay with the Jays.
Yes, for sure. Totally not worried about, you know, the guy that has all the leverage in the world and is going to make $500 million. Not worried about that at all.
Okay. Back to our scheduled programming here.
Back to that 5-2, 3-2 win on Saturday night?
Back to the 3-1, 5-2, back-to-back losses. JB, we'll start with you and just your thoughts of, where do you want to focus? You want to focus on Friday before Saturday, or you want to kind of just give us an overall look?
I guess just I'll zoom out on overall and say anytime you take two losses, some things went wrong. And what seems to be going wrong for me right now is they still struggle to generate 5-on-5 and really to control the play at 5-on-5. I know when prior to Matthews' injury, they're like a top 10 team at controlling play. Once he goes out, they're the worst team in the league or second last team in the league. And since he's come back, they're no better. They're still a very bottom team at controlling play. And I think it's concerning anytime you're getting 40% of the scoring chances in these games. Goalies have been good and they've hung around. They're good defensively. Lots is going right. But the concern is they can't score. They're not controlling the game, Skip.
It is just start looking at the numbers here and Nick Robertson, 2 goals, 23 games, no assists.
I know.
Ryan Reeves, 19 games, no goals. Grubenkin, I get it, seven games, no points. Dewar, 11, no points.
No points.
No good. Right? Alex Nylander, 5 games. This guy comes up with a reputation of ripping it up in the American Hockey League.
Yeah.
It's seen power play time.
Yeah. No chance.
Played with your best players, including your brother. No points.
Holmberg, no points. Right. Like it's.
He's got three points.
One goal.
5 points.
Into an empty net.
No goals for me is like, it's like the general statement about they're not contributing any goals.
Yeah.
So the bottom half, I know Jonas Siegel had a stat in his article that the top 6 forwards in the Leafs, which, you know, the core four plus Nyzen McMahon, have 80% of their goals this year. They're fourth last in goals by D. Like, they're just not getting anything outside of the guys who always score. We did so much work on them not being team A, team B. They're team A, team B again.
In about half an hour, we're going to welcome in head coach of the New Jersey Devils, Sheldon Keefe.
Mm-hmm.
This will be interesting.
I think we could probably ask him about this. Got some experience with it.
A little bit.
Yeah.
For sure. So you're going to want to stick around for that. As far as our Kipper's Clipper, let's start with Craig Berube on his overview Friday night.
Saturday night. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Their power play got a couple goals. And then, I thought it was a pretty solid game. We worked. We competed. Took too many penalties. And, the 6-on-5, like at the end of the game there, 6-on-4, we got to come up with a better play there and, a little more urgency on that play, in my opinion.
I thought it was interesting that he said a little bit more urgency.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I've loved Craig Berube. I've said a million times how much I've loved him on this show at the start of this year. How do you not pull the goalie with an offensive zone draw when it's a power play? You have the offensive zone draw. There's just over 2 minutes left in the game. You talk about urgency.
Mm-hmm.
that's not pulling the goalie there is the lack of urgency, like the opposite of it. I couldn't believe they didn't pull the goalie right away.
Yeah, curious your thoughts on that too. So they're up a goal and they're on the power
play.
I'm with you. 2:14. I was thinking, like, in his mind, it's like, okay, they can shoot for the empty net, so they can just kind of fire.
Want to make sure they win the draw. But if they want to win the draw, then take them out. It was a full minute after that they didn't take the draw.
No, totally. I totally agree with you. I was trying to put myself in his shoes and what he might have been thinking. But that did, you know, in an era where everyone's pulling goalies earlier, felt like the right time to make the pull.
I tell you, I buy into the theory that if you're down and you're fighting the clock like that, I would pull the goalie at center ice. I would pull him, with the exception of maybe an offensive zone draw.
You're an early defensive pull guy.
I am. I do believe in it. Yeah. I do believe in it. Again, you can see stretches of 5, 7, 10 minutes during any hockey game at any point. Teams aren't even close to getting a shot on goal.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. So I'm okay with those percentages. But I want an extra attacker on the ice, even if we lose the draw. Like, I cannot wait for puck possession and then have the guys regroup. I want that extra guy on the ice then.
Yep. Extra body to win the puck to, you know.
Get in on a forecheck or a 50-50 puck. I got a better chance of outmanning. Even if I lose the draw, I have a better chance with that player on the ice there to get in someone's lane or to hurry someone up, to turn a puck over. To me, I'm not the weight guy.
So, you know, I talked about them being a team A, team B. To talk a little team A for a second, Mitch Marner, just by far their best player right now. You know, you and I talk about that all the time, but to me, just not even particularly close. It's interesting that they got Max Pacioretty as a line mate. You're a big Patches booster. What did you
think?
I am, but listen,
do I feel like Max Pacioretty, much like Max Domi, can go and fill spots and maybe have a good week? Do I envision him holding that spot right to first round of the playoffs? No, absolutely not. I think those are short term solutions, but you didn't, like, nowhere in my world do you invite a guy on a PTO at his age and then find out that he's going to be your number one left winger.
Well, we do this with the Leafs the last however many years. And it's
I said this on Leafs Talk, but I'm like, God, that gave me Thornton vibes.
Yeah.
Put him up there.
You're like, oh, maybe this works.
And they put Thornton with Matthews and Marner multiple times, right? Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God.
I don't agree with them doing it right now. I don't disagree with it. Like, there's not an obvious other option. Right
now. We're not starting game one like this.
No, I agree. Like, it's a fine move, but that's what the vibe was that I got when I saw it happening.
Totally.
Yeah, so.
He's worked with Willie and JT. You're right. He can plug in there in spots, but.
I feel the same way as Matthews and Marner, where you're going into the playoffs or you want a big win. You're going to put Matthews and Marner together, and you're going to put Nyes on the left side.
It's your best line. Why don't we listen to Berube on why Pacioretty went with Matthews and Marner? Clip of 3.
A little aggressive at times. Like, you know, just hasn't played in a while, wants to be physical, wants to do what he does. And, we just went to the box too much in general five times. You know, that's good players over there.
That was clip 2. But that was F. Because, I mean,
that's okay. We'll play the other one, and then we'll come out of it.
Yeah,
I just felt like he was going to be a heavy player for him down low in the offensive zone, and they ended up getting a goal out of it. And, you know, I thought Max did a good job tonight with them guys. Thought, you know, kind of maybe died off later on in the game. Hasn't played in a while.
I like those reasons. I don't mind those reasons. I just don't see it as a real strong, long-term play.
You can kind of feel Pacioretty recognize that how he's going to get opportunity on this team is by being physical and heavy. And so, you know, maybe a little undisciplined.
Yeah, I mean,
he came in and he lassoed somebody for, was that the second consecutive penalty that he had?
Yeah, I mean, that was a hero call. I'm not going to talk about the officiating over this weekend, but people would like me to. I won't do it, but I mean, there's a scrum in front of the net after they're jamming away. The goalie guy falls down. You pick him out. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Like, give me a break. But he took two penalties back to back. He can't do it.
Yeah.
But, go ahead.
It's funny watching someone. It's not his element. It's not the way he's played over his whole career. And so maybe he doesn't quite have a sense for where that line is because that's not his natural
but
inclination.
I know we've had long-term conversations, but it's kind of seeping a little bit here. And that is that it's always been a bit of a weakness, that left side.
Years now.
Okay.
And it's the first week of our show you've been talking
really,
about.
In a perfect world, you would have loved that if Matthew Nyes could just hold his own there with Matthews and Marner. And then Bobby McMahon was going to be that guy that could come in, take a next level, maybe put up 25 goals and maybe 25 assists and come in 50-ish, right, alongside a Tavares maybe or Willie. It's just not happening right now. And outside of that, then you've got a major drop off.
Yeah, if you prorate Bobby McMahon's stats, he in an 82 game season, he'd have 24 goals and 4 assists. That would be his season right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, not exactly how you would have drawn it up.
Can't yeah.
It is disappointing though that this guy, and I know it's the thing we talk about, he can't stay healthy, because I think it's kind of one of the underrated stories from last year's playoffs, that they couldn't score, didn't have depth scoring, and he was a guy who scores for them as a depth guy. Again, he's not in the lineup. They're struggling with depth scoring. Like, not going to say they need Bobby McMahon, but he is a difference maker in the bottom of the lineup.
And when he's in, he's fast, and he can get to the net, and he cuts in off his wing, and you're like, okay, I'm noticing him.
Yeah, he can pull the play in that direction. They don't have a ton of guys like that. You know, now I'm grasping at straws, but like I like Lorenz a lot. Maybe he's a guy who could get a little bit more opportunity. I like him every time he's out there. So, but looking for something.
You know, you talk about the lack of 5-on-5 scoring, and you talk about, but like, who's going to come back here? And how, like, it feels like there's a lot of pressure on Domi coming back
here. Well, McMahon and Domi and Yarncroke. Yarncroke scored 20 last year. Laugh all you like.
But is
like,
he close?
No, like, he got surgery.
Anywhere to be found.
I don't think he's a factor.
But, I mean, he's going to be a Toronto Maple Leaf this year, is he not?
Good question.
Like, do you think he's just...
I mean, he had surgery, so I don't know how long that lasts. Yeah. But I'm not depending on him as a option, really. But, like... Domi coming back in here feels like there's a ton of pressure on him. He didn't score once before he got hurt. Mm-hmm. He was in a 13-game or however long point drought when he was gone. So that's one guy. McMahon can't stay healthy. It's like it's the Team A, Team B situation very much so here. I don't know.
We talked about third-line center. They may be looking for more than that. And you've mentioned hopefully big game hunting a little bit. But we do have Berube weighing in on we need some bottom six. Clip 4, please.
Well, yeah, for sure. We need some guys to contribute down in the bottom six, for sure. Got to find a way to manufacture some goals from those guys, for sure. I agree.
So, is there a fair time to have a Reeves conversation as a guy that's in there every night still? Played both sides of a back-to-back for them. Plays close to 7 minutes a night.
What are you saying? You want him out of the lineup?
I'm saying he could be eligible to come out here and there.
Yeah.
I just don't, you don't, you're just too hurt. You don't have anyone good to put in who's going to score there, you know? Yeah. Like,
you know, I mean, Steve's scores every night in the AHL. You come up, you put him in the fourth line, it's going to look worse.
No, it's probably 1% better offensively. Yeah. No, 10% better offensively, whatever. I don't disagree with that. If that, is the biggest problem, then, you know, Reeves not there to do that, but.
There's just so many guys in the bottom six they're putting over there with no hope of a goal. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's like, well, they're the good defensively, but it's like there's no. So who's the hope?
Kampf, you're like, even when he comes back, he's not supposed to score.
And it's like,
Reeves not supposed to score. Holmberg, same.
None of the guys they throw over, other than the four guys, gives you a hope in hell.
I'm going to throw a little emphasis on Craig Berube on this. Okay. And I think he's done a heck of a job.
Yep.
And I think we've had more than a sample size to suggest that at least for the Atlantic Division, I can tell you that the only two teams that look like they can win a best of seven series is Florida and Toronto. So everybody else I kind of have underneath.
Yep.
So he's done a good job, but I think the onus is now on him is to help coach these guys in the bottom six to put a little bit more emphasis on, I don't know if you want to use the word creativity or just overall offense, but I think for the first 25-plus games, they've been programmed a certain way right from training camp to get pucks in deep, keep it simple, and
north-south.
North-south. And somewhere there's got to be a little bit of a, just a little bit more of, don't worry about it so much. Try to make a play.
Yeah.
A little bit more emphasis on trying to make a play instead of dumping and chasing and playing that old hard style, which is important, but you got to find a bit of a fine line. And I know, I think the score was 4-2 on the second empty net goal.
It was 3-2, the final score.
5-2. Oh, sorry. Okay.
So I don't know if you remember the play, but Leafs had the puck. I think it was Matthew Nyes has it, has a ton of room to gain the blue line.
And he dumped it?
And he dumps it.
Yeah.
And then,
I do remember that.
And it's like, this is the part where, you know, Craig Berube and his coaching staff have to say, listen, we have possession of the puck.
Yeah.
We have a 100%.
We want to go north, but you can still go north if you have it. Like,
so you went. We went from 100% having the puck to a 50-50 chance of getting it back.
Yeah.
And we didn't get it back, and now it's back in our net. That's where you encourage him to hold on to the puck, gain the zone, look for a man, just be, take an extra step. And I think all of these guys are just like absolutely almost numb now to making plays.
Well, you get to stay in the lineup if you don't turn it over. Like, there's no onus on these guys to actually produce. It's just don't turn it over and we'll put you back on the ice. And yeah, it's funny because the Devils, where Sheldon Keefe, who we're going to talk to today, their offensive stats have gone up quite a bit, and the Leafs have gone down quite a bit. And obviously, both teams needed that. Like, the Leafs needed to prioritize things differently. But this is the first time in the Matthews-Marner era the team has been under 3 goals per game offensively. It hasn't happened before, and they're down. So, you know, looking for it a bit. Nick Robertson, one of the guys who can't score. And was healthy scratched after playing 10 minutes on Friday night. You think they're just punting on this guy? Have they seen enough?
Well, Friday.
Are we going to do this again?
Well, there's nothing else to say, but Friday, they're scratching him now.
Friday, in a long list of bad ones, was a bad one. Like, it was Friday night. I didn't think Friday night was a particularly good one for anyone. I thought the Washington Capitals looked excellent and shut everybody down. But, yeah, I mean, Robertson was not great in that game.
All right, let's go to Berube while we're on the subject of Nick Robertson.
Cliff six.
We just got to play better, you know. That's it. I mean, we all know that. I've talked to Nick today about it. We'll figure it out. You know, it's my job to help him and the coaching staff, and it's his job to find a way to play better hockey. He's capable of it. You know, he's got ability, speed. He's got a good shot. We got to find a way to get him going.
All right. He took a little responsibility on that.
Yeah, just what you're talking about.
It's my job.
Yeah.
Absolutely, it's your job. You gotta find a way for not only Nick, but a lot of these guys in the bottom six to find different ways to get to the net.
Yeah.
So, but let me ask you this. After you've been so hardcore coaching about the defensive side of the puck and north and south and straight lines and hard hockey, like, can you reverse course? Like,
I don't think you need to reverse it.
Well, not reverse, but like massage the message a little bit.
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
You can.
I love the point you're making about, like, I still want to be a north-south coach. I still want us to go north-south. Yeah. But if you can go north with it, that's allowed.
Yeah.
You know, like, hang on to a little bit extra. One other guy he talked about was Nyes, who, returning from his concussion, not as effective. I've become a little bit worried that Nyes is, you know, he's so good at cleaning up after Matthews and Marner and net front and whatever. I'd still like to see him as a guy try to make some plays. He's a talented guy, and I feel like he's a little stuck in a rut.
Ah, shoot it in the net on Saturday night.
Yeah, the one off the inside of the post.
Shoot it in the net.
That was a tough
great positioning.
Roller. Yeah, he's in the
you
right
got
spot.
A lot on the puck. It just,
a roller.
I hate hockey. Frustrating.
Didn't get the bounce.
So let's just listen to Berube. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, just touch it a little bit on Matthew Nyes. And I'm like you and many other people. There's just a lot to love about this guy and the upside. But if someone asked me, are you convinced that this guy can become a top power forward, a guy that can maybe on a good year have 40 goals, 80 points, 90 points? I'd probably say
it's a big ask. 40
I'm 75% sure that he's got enough talent, but there's sometimes I watch him and there's hockey IQ decisions that don't match up to where I think his ceiling physically could be.
You know, like if he's, I think the question for me is like, is he going to be a 30 goal, 50 point power forward who shoots it in the net sometimes and just kind of gets in the crease? Or is he a guy who can also make plays and, to your point, get to the 80 point, like, you know, get to a point per game type of, that's, I'm not as sure. I thought that was there and I'm not as sure now.
Okay. So we're kind of on the right vibe on that. And maybe it's just more reps. Like, what is he at now? 125 career games. They say defensemen, we need to get them over what? 200, 250 before they really start to understand the game. Maybe
you know better than
Nye's just is still learning and growing.
Those contracts a little cheaper
at
now.
The NHL 100, level.
108 NHL games.
108. That's think about it.
Yeah.
It's not even a year and a half in the NHL.
No, and he's just 22, right? He turned that month and a bit ago.
So maybe it's just a matter of still getting him more comfortable NHL level. He's out of college, guys. He's just, remember, it's out of college. The things that he did or he could get away with, including going through the neutral zone 1,000 miles an hour and you never got run over like he did earlier this year. Those are all kind of learning experiences at the NHL level.
Yeah. So let's listen to Craig Berube's thoughts, clip 5 on Nyes.
I thought he got better as the game went along, to be honest with you. I think, you know, coming back from his injury, he's been okay, you know, a little tentative, I think. But I thought tonight he kind of broke through that a little bit. Had some opportunities and was physical again. So it was good to see that.
Yeah, it's interesting you use tentative.
Yeah, I see the same stuff, don't you, since he came back?
Yeah.
Like he was, like the early in the year, he was
bullying people,
hammering guys.
Yeah.
And just didn't continue to do that.
Can I add one more name to the tentative?
Matthews.
You couldn't get that out fast enough.
Oh, it's
like
sticking out.
What is going on here?
I don't know. I mean, I want to give the benefit of the doubt with the injury and ramping stuff up and that he's not still hurt. Or like, he's not, since the start of this season and even in training camp, he hasn't been the same guy, flat out. So I'm not sure.
I feel like he's swooping. Like I just don't see the same stops and starts. It's a lot of...
I don't see any jump with him.
And yeah, like it's a high bar for him.
I have him at like 70, 75% max.
Yeah.
Like he's out there. I'm watching him out there. It's like he's towing a boat.
I don't see him.
He's moving like my 86 Volvo in high school.
There is no Matthews peak when he's skating out there.
No, I agree. I don't think he's close to himself. And I mean, you got to think that it's related to a trip overseas.
Ton of hockey this month too. Like it's going to be quite the ask.
Talked to Berube today But he talked to Berube today. I couldn't use the audio because it sounded like they're in an old timey jail, drips and people banging on stuff. So we didn't play the audio, but he said that, you know, he's his first back to back and he thinks his legs are getting better and all that stuff.
Okay.
But like, I mean, how many games has he played here now? I mean, you'd like to see some vintage Matthews here, right?
He's seeing what we're seeing.
For sure.
Okay.
How could you not?
Yeah.
And I think, like, I mean...
producing for now.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. But anyways, we should break to go to
Sheldon. Let's take a quick break. When we return, Sheldon Keefe, head coach of the New Jersey Devils, on deck as his Devils will entertain the Toronto Maple Leafs tomorrow night, 7 p.m. More with Sheldon after the break.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. In a few minutes, Sheldon Keefe, head coach of the New Jersey Devils. Have we got him? Is he ready?
Got him.
All right, let's go. Sheldon, thanks for joining us, man. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well, thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So we're a little over a quarter of the way here. You've got your Devils team firmly entrenched here for a good run here. How's it been overall for your experience so far? When you can compare it to, obviously, guys like us covering you on a daily basis.
You know what? It's been really good. As I've gone through it all, obviously it's a new experience for me. I think if I was really to describe it, I'd say there's a lot more similarities than there are differences. In terms of the job, it's at the end of the day, it's hockey and the schedule in the league, all those things are kind of the same. There's a little difference in the media dynamics and stuff they're dealing with on a daily basis, but, doesn't take away from the fact that, you're coaching a team that's got expectations and we're trying to create high standards here and looking to live up to them every day.
Sheldon, you've got some big names there on that team, and you had some big names here. And I wonder, it was different when we were in the American Hockey League than the guys you're coaching now. You have egos and big contracts with these players. How do you balance guys going for these personal goals versus trying to get them on the team page? I know you have to keep them happy and give them those opportunities, but how do you get them then to also fall in line with your team plan?
I really think it's just how you go about it, how you talk to the group and how you present it. Obviously a lot of that is very personal to each player and their own personality and priorities and such. But, from my experience, the players want both. They want team success and they want to be thriving themselves. They've got personal goals and their own egos and all of these kind of things that come with being great. You don't get to be a premier talent without some level of ego and goals and aspirations and all of these sort of things, but they got to meet, they got to be connected. And at times one has to be checked for the other. And more often, of course, it's got to be for the team. But it just so happens when you're dealing with your biggest egos and your biggest talents, those players thriving ultimately fuels the team. So I think in so many ways it's aligned and that's how I approach it.
We know you've been blessed with a couple of superstars in Austin Matthews and you to start your NHL career, and now Jack Hughes. When it comes to deploying them or putting them out there, is there much difference with your philosophy, or is it pretty much when you got a guy like that, you just put him over the boards?
Well, I'm trying to get to know each guy and figure out what it is that, that makes them tick and how to best utilize their skills and assets. I've also got Nico Hischier here, obviously, who quite often takes a lot of the defensive responsibilities. He's a great player offensively in his own right and is having a good season offensively, but just takes so much of a defensive load that it makes it a little bit easier and natural to give someone like Jack a lot of the offensive looks in terms of face-offs and favorable matchups and things like that. So I think partially it's player specific and partially it's just what do you have in terms of your assets on your team and how do you utilize your assets best.
The NHL is a tough league to win in, and obviously every night or every game you go into it, you're trying to build a lineup that can win that game. But when you're a team that's near the top of the division or definitely a playoff team, how often would you experiment and say, maybe this isn't the best thing for us tonight, but I just want to see how this mix of a lineup looks?
Well, I think it depends on where you're at and where you're at with the team. And we're a team. We want to be a playoff team. We got to earn that. We got a lot of hockey left to play here. We put ourselves in a pretty good position here early on, but this is an organization, a team that's made the playoffs twice in the last 12 years. You know, I think in my time in Toronto, we were fortunate to be a playoff team every year. You got, you know, the top players there have known nothing but that, and they've got great confidence. They show up in training camp that, you know, as long as they deliver on their end, they're going to be a playoff team. I think you are sort of looking a little bit further down the line. We're trying to build a foundation here. You know, we've got good players. We've got a great opportunity to really, you know, build a good team, but we're not getting ahead of ourselves. We got lots of work to do on a daily basis. Now, but with that said, I think as a coach, you're always looking for the best mix you can, and you're always sort of looking down the line and what if, and being prepared, you know, if injuries and things like that that might pop up, and try to have guys familiar with one another. But I'm very much still learning about this team and the players themselves. So, you know, I'm just trying to let things breathe a little bit. We haven't changed much from day one of training camp. Some little tweaks here and there, but generally speaking, I've just been kind of putting some pairs together, both on defense and on forward, and kind of playing a little bit with a third guy on each line. But, you know, whether it's 5-on-5 player special teams, you want to build a solid foundation and build from there. And that's kind of where I'm at here in my first year.
Also in net, a lot of experience with Markstrom and Jake Allen here. And I think the split's been like 20 starts for Markstrom and 10 for Allen. Was that the game plan all along? Do you see this ending up being a 50-30 kind of split, knowing that Markstrom will be hopefully your guy when it's all said and done?
Yeah, I mean, in acquiring Marky, you know, that certainly fits his vision, is to have him take the bulk of the starts. He's played a lot through his career. Jake Allen, I think, has been a great support for Mark. He's played well for us. We just have to be careful, you know, with both goaltenders' workloads. They're both older guys, and we want to make sure that they're in the best position possible to succeed each day. Jake has, yeah, played very well, as I said. I think we've got to be very careful with his workload. In fact, it looks like he's going to miss a little bit of time here right now. He got tweaked something yesterday in the game. So just little things like that. You just got to be smart with both guys. But Marky's, you know, played a lot in his career, as I said, and will take the load for us. But we're fortunate to have someone like Jake that's just been so supportive and played well when called on.
Sheldon, I'm wondering if you have a philosophy on the offensive side of the puck. You're a coach who I think who your teams have had great offensive success, and I'll recognize that the Devils' defensive numbers are a lot better too this year. But here in Toronto, the team has, you know, beat the drum about being more of a north-south team and are struggling to produce a little bit offensively. Do you coach the offensive side of things much, or is that something you just say, you trust your elite guys to create that?
Well, there has to be a certain level of trust there that those guys, you know, you put them in positions to succeed and they're going to be able to make plays. But that said, I definitely believe that I coach the offense a lot. I think that's a huge part of the game, not just because of the offense that, you know, that leads to goals. But I think when you have a good offense, you automatically become better defensively because you just have the puck a lot and you're able to wear down the opposition and things like that. So that to me is how I look at offense is, it's not just a way to score goals, but it's a way to control play. So we talk about that quite a bit. And then also just in turn, I think the more we have the puck in favorable positions that our talent's going to be able to come through. So, you know, it's one of those things as a coach, you want to be as good as you can in each area. I mean, we sat down in the off season and looked at it and, you know, started talking about, you know, some things, some goals and things that you want to shoot for. For me, you want to be good at everything. You want to be good at keeping the puck out of your net. You want to be good at putting it in the other team's net. You want to be good on special teams and in goal. And you want, you want to be good on the physical side of things. And that's what I feel good about with where we're at as a team. You know, I think we sit top 10 in goals for, top 10 in goals against, top 10 in special teams. And even on the physical side, it hits fighting majors, like all these things. Our players have really embraced what we're asking them to do and have been good in each area. So I think that's really what you're shooting for. And then you want to hope that it's all able to thrive when it counts the most in the playoffs. And of course, that's where we've fallen short, and that's why I'm talking to you remotely from New Jersey.
You're watching and listening to Sheldon Keefe, head coach of the New Jersey Devils. So tomorrow night you face a Leaf team that's looking for answers in their bottom six. And overall, how do you feel like your bottom six has performed so far?
I would say, we're in a similar boat. We've had some injuries here with Curtis Lazar and Nate Bastian, two guys that just had terrific starts to the season for us in terms of just being guys who play hard and simple hockey and can take on some defensive responsibilities and kill penalties and forecheck and do a lot of little things that can kind of set the table for our other lines. Yeah, we really missed those guys, and we felt that a little bit. But that said, I think we've gotten good performances and big goals at key times from different people. Paul Cotter, for the most part, played on our lower lines and has scored some big goals and made big plays for us. Holla and Mercer, these guys have been really good too at different times. And I think right now we're searching for it a little bit in that bottom mix and are changing things up a little to try to spark some things and get a little bit more balanced approach. But I think that's sort of the reality of the league. There's not many teams that are really rolling, four high octane lines. It's you're just trying to manage the game as best you can, get key goals from lowering your lines, and hope that your talent can come through more often than not.
Sheldon, last one from me. Thanks for joining us today. I just when you got there, you obviously knew quite a bit about your roster. Obviously, you've been playing these guys, but was there anyone when you got there you're like, oh, I didn't know that this player, had a certain ability?
I would say, Jesper Bratt, I think is probably the guy that I've been most impressed with, and I don't want to say surprised, because when you coach against him, you can see his talent, but it really is exceptional. I mean, and this, of course, some of the obvious guys that we have, I think, but Jesper Bratt is having a great season and has had a number of other good seasons, but his skill level and his speed, his edge work, his ability to escape pressure is truly elite. He's been a good penalty killer for us. And then it's just an impressive guy in terms of how he manages his life and his body and being prepared and consistent every day with his habits. He's a really good example for any player in terms of how he manages himself. I've been really impressed with him in all facets of his game and life.
A few bucks on the board tomorrow night, Sheldon.
You know what? I put more than a few up the first time we played, so this time they're not getting it.
They missed their chance, eh?
Well, we appreciate your time, man, and thanks for doing this for us.
My pleasure.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
He's got a fast team, man. He's had that team's been fast for a while, but they can scoot.
Jesper Bratt, 37 points in 30 games, actually leading the Devils this year. 5'10", 26 years old, just hums out there.
It's funny, hearing Sheldon talk, and I'm not sure if he's still there, and I probably left immediately, but, much like some people probably feel with us, that you listen to somebody every single day for 5 years, that you feel this really big sense of familiarity.
Yeah.
And, I don't know him at all. But I feel like I know everything about him.
Yeah.
I listen to him. I know that guy so well, and he doesn't know who I am.
So it's like having an ex come on the show.
Really is. had that feel. All of us are kind of like, what do we say? What do we say?
In itself. Let's give the guy credit for even coming on
Absolutely.
Our show. Yeah. If I had to listen to ourselves every day for 3 years, I would have said,
no chance.
Pass. I'm still sick of you guys. Give me a year to not be sick of you guys, and then I'll come on the show. Yeah. And I'd go, I get it, Sheldon. I get it. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe a year and a half.
I mean, his team having almost 40 points. And
doesn't hurt.
Probably makes it a little easier to come back on with the.
I'd say so.
But do you get that? You do know him. So you've worked with him closely. You know him well. I don't know how Kipper does. I just felt like he came on. I was like,
I worked with him during some rough years. I worked for him when I had to learn IT to become the video coach on the spot mid-season, while also being 18 months prior to my first rehab visit. I was not wow. at my finest version of wow. myself when I worked with him.
A challenge.
And he so, still came on.
Yeah, he's a heck of a guy. I appreciate the patience he had.
Not just Sheldon, though, but anybody that has gone through a significant experience like Sheldon has had, it can't help but make you a better coach if you were paying attention to the things that went well and the things probably like a redo on.
Mm-hmm. It is funny, like the team there is built not too dissimilarly from the Leafs in that your best players are pure skill, not heavy, you know, Brat and Hughes guys. You know, and then you kind of have, it's very similar build. Dougie Hamilton is probably the biggest difference. You have a pure top end power play one D man, which I don't think he ever had here.
And
now, by the way, they're first in the NHL in power play.
And he's starting to warm up. He came off a very significant injury.
Yeah. 21 points in 30 games for him, 5 snipes.
Yeah.
Another guy that in years past you would have said was a lock for Team Canada on the back end.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just injuries and everything else. But they actually, you know, everybody talks about Barkov, including Kipper Barkov, being the most underrated guy in the league. But, he wins Selkies and he's cup winner. And everybody talks about how great he is. They actually have two of the guys that are the most underrated. Brat and Heischer, to me, are two of the most underrated guys in the league. Heischer is one of the best two-way centers in the league. Almost 30 points in 30 games this year, 15 goals. I really like watching him play.
Yeah.
And was he was first overall, right? Like second was yeah. Nolan Patrick, right?
A good decision.
I'd say.
That worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one I find interesting here, and we all agree he's going to be really good, but how good is the brother, Luke?
Yeah. Really, really good.
Right?
They're all
how quickly,
good.
Though, how quickly he gets really, really good mm-hmm. might be how quickly the New Jersey Devils go to next level. They could win a Stanley Cup.
They have some exceptional defensive defensemen like Brett Pesce, Jonas Siegenthaler, and Jonathan Kovacevic are all really, really good defenders. Dylan's a big hitter. Hamilton can shoot it in. And then if Hughes becomes a top-end guy, you know, I've heard people say, oh, the Devils are pretty small up front. That's a big decor.
Was Kovacevic, he was a Hab, right?
He was, and he's very good.
They just let him,
the top pairs for, like, defensive stuff, he's involved.
They just let him.
I guess they kept all the.
Anyways, I've been saying this since the summer and since Sheldon got hired there, but I got to tell you, a Leafs-Devils playoff matchup at some point feels really inevitable to me.
Does it?
Yeah. I don't know how it would stack up. I guess if they win that division, it would be a conference final. Leafs are a wild card. They're the best team. Like, I don't know what the thing is, but the way things go in this city, I really do feel a matchup between those two.
Really fun.
Sheldon Keefe's big breakthrough comes against the Leafs at your expense.
Does that sound impossible?
No.
Does that sound extremely possible? Because I said that day one when he got hired there. It just feels like that would be a really, feels like it'd be a good playoff series too, but go back to my youth, Devils and Leafs.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Palat, Meyer, they got a good hockey club.
Yeah. Palat, I'm curious how that's going. His numbers aren't sterling or anything, but they just do. That Paul Cotter's
having
a
great year. There's something to be said about a guy like that with his
in a playoff series,
Stanley
who's
Cup pedigree in Tampa Bay, coming into the room every day. It matters to some of those kids, right?
Yeah, and they have him as like a pure conscience on a line with Hughes and Brat right now.
Yeah, Palat.
By the way, we haven't mentioned Timo Myers on that team. Remember him?
Yeah,
who I wanted to trade Matthew Nyes for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you do it today? Maybe.
I mean, the revisionist history of it isn't as bad as I thought it was at one point this year, but yeah, there you go. Anyways, McCabe, by the way, skating again today.
He's fine.
I texted Luke
Fox.
He's fine?
Yeah, he's fine. I'm telling you, he's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just saying, the second he missed a game or a practice, I was like, this is bad.
Here's what Luke Fox had to say. I texted him. He said, McCabe practiced in full on fourth pair with Rafai, told doubtful for tomorrow. Not completely ruled out, though.
Yeah, so there you go. He's fine.
Okay.
He's fine.
Okay.
And we're fine.
We are fine.
Take a deep breath. We're just getting started.
Talk some trades.
We go national next. Gary Galley will join us. Lots of talk from Florida. They got the Board of Governors, including tampering. I've never heard this expression in my life. Soft tampering.
But I think that's a thing. Well, you're not tampering, but you're kind of
how soft
tampering. You can't be kind of pregnant here, boys.
How soft? We'll find out when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.